And we went to, I think that year, our third year in business, almost 10 million. It was 9.8 million.
You had, so that was your year of like explosion.
Grow the sales, fix the operations. Grow the sales, fix the operations. It's a never ending cycle. He was a junior partner at a massive company that ended up selling for like $680 million. I realized that there was a gap. I needed to find somebody because it wasn't me. I wasn't the gap filler. I'm not the integrator guy that's going to sit down and like do whatever, all these things, put them together. I'm the idea guy. You may have different ideas on the route to get there, but you guys have enough respect to talk through the routes and make decisions together. We're going to find the best route to get to this destination that we both want.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of No Suits Allowed. I'm really excited to be able to share this episode with you. I'm in Indie Roof Studios headquarters. What is this studio called? I guess it's the Work Hard, Play Harder. Well, you can't see the sign here because it'll be superimposed by then. But anyway.
Yeah, it's this is our office, but we need to film content a lot for not only customers, but different things that we do. And so we do a podcast sometimes, not all the time, right? Just when we have some people around and we want to do some fun stuff, it's enjoyable. So we made this room here, and it's
pretty, I love it.
This was dead space. This wall was not here. This was just a wheelchair ramp up to the kitchen and a closet. That was literally it. There was no lights, so it was real dark and weird over here. So anyway, we used it well.
This looks good, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, feels like a little Joe Rogan-ish here.
Yeah.
All right. Got it going on. I like the table too. Like, look at the, you know,
Indie Roof colors.
Look at that. I see it in the
shirt.
Yeah,
there you go.
Anyway, so I'm really excited this week. I know that we're kind of joking around a little bit as we start, but Mr. Aaron Christie here with me. He is the owner of Indie Roof and also what I know to be a serial entrepreneur operating in other capacities as well, but obviously Indie Roof is your primary thing. But we're going to get into some of that today. And again, if you like this and like the content we share, if you would please like, subscribe, and just let us know how you think about this. What you think about this episode would be great. And I'm excited to get into it. And as in the spirit of the No Suits Allowed, this is an unfiltered voice from an entrepreneur, from a business leader, and someone that's going to be able to, you know, obviously offer a lot of value today and be able to get into some things that you probably will find pretty interesting. So thanks for having me, brother. Thanks for having me in the studio.
That was a very nice intro. I appreciate that. Thank you.
You're a good. I don't know much about Aaron other than he likes the Pacers, and for that, we shouldn't even be doing this episode.
No, we should. I'll be frank. I flew out to OKC and went with Derek Klein to the OKC Pacer game. Connor met us there. He's not a very gracious sports fan. Awful guy when it comes to sports. I've known him for a long time. Great guy in person. When it comes to sports, awful guy. Just remember that. If he's ever playing you in any team sport, just don't go or don't
have him around.
So I feel like that's fair.
I'm a sore winner. When you're a winner.
Yeah. 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 No, you are. That's fair. Nobody likes a sore loser or a winner.
I'm just kidding.
You do both well.
I do. Listen, I felt like I was being pretty nice during that Pacer and Thunder series, and we have to talk about that.
That was you being nice?
Yeah, dude. I mean, like, let's be honest. I gave you a lot of credit when a lot of people were not giving those Pacers a lot of credit. I mean, dude, you got to give it to me.
All right.
How many people in the news media said the Pacers were going to lose that thing?
Well, they said that about every single person all the way.
And that's what I'm saying. And at least I was like, dude, I'm a little legitimately scared here.
Yeah, at game seven, you should be.
No.
Yeah.
I was scared. I was scared. Game four. That was pretty. You could have put the foot down on
should've
the
neck. Should have been scared game one.
Mm. See, this is the type.
Anyway,
he is.
Let's move on.
No. It was important. They have to talk about that because you being a Pacer fan, and you know, I have to throw some shade. So give me a little bit, just very quickly. I know that every podcast seems to start this way, but just like who you are, what's your, you know, where you grew up. I know that you're here now in Indianapolis, so we're in Indianapolis, Indiana. But you know, just share a little bit about your story, and we'll kind of backfill.
Sure. Grew up watching the Pacers. No. I grew up here in Indiana. I worked in my family. I never went to college. Went right into sales. I loved sales. I didn't love school going and studying. I wanted to get like right into the workforce. Got in my family business, which was an educational publishing company. which helped people transition from, at the time, LPN or LVN to their RN, right? They got them the courses they need to finish the degree. And so
that's interesting. I was in ed tech space for a little while.
Oh, were you?
Yeah. So, I mean, I did it for 16 years. And so it advanced, we watched it advance through the years, because at first it was like people studying materials at home, then testing out of the courses. Then it turned into having physical classrooms and we would teach them the courses. Then it turned into online classes when like Blackboard first came out. And it was just cool to just kind of see it advance through. And now they have, you know, all of these online courses and everything that all are available now. And it's kind of based on seeing this progression through over the same thing that I lived, but, it was a lot of traveling, home a week, gone a week, home a week, gone a week. Cool. When I was single, got married, had kids, families crying every other week. Like, and the thing is, even when you're home for a week, and I'm sure you've traveled enough that you know this, like you're not really there because you know, you're just waiting to leave the next day.
Well, or you're playing catch up from what you were when you were gone. Then you got to sit at the computer, you know, all this stuff. When you're on the road, you're not doing as much. So yeah, I know that
100%. Yeah. And then, so even on a weekend when you're there and home, you know, you're leaving Sunday or Monday. So I had to figure out something else to do, and I won't get into the whole details of it, but basically got introduced to roofing, fell in love with it, went all in for myself with not much background, and was just me learning the ins and outs for like, I got to make the mistakes myself and learn it. And fortunately I'm a guy that's, when I make a mistake and I feel like an idiot, I don't ever want to feel that way again. So, you know, I learned a lot of mistakes, and then, that was in 2018 when I started the company. And, it was just me for about a year. Had a couple part-time guys in 2019. They were just kind of friends of mine. I'm like, kind of like whenever you get a roof type of deal. And then 2020, I felt like I was in a position with knowledge and, financially, enough in a good position to where I could start growing. And so we brought in a GM, and hired a lot of salespeople, went through, it was COVID. Right. And so they locked everything down, but fortunately we were able to go around and
all the necessary workers.
Yeah. And, I was more of a, I was never a door knocker. I didn't like it. I didn't like doors getting slammed in my face. I hate rejection.
So, we could go so off with all these, pacer, but anyway, we're going to leave it. I'm going to leave it alone.
Yeah.
I'm going to not go ahead.
At the time, it wasn't near as tough to fight in like the meta world, Facebook world for leads. And we had a good storm in 2020. I cranked out some Facebook leads, got a lot of traction. I got really good at, building relationships with realtors, as well. And it just kind of took off, and we went to, I think that year, our third year in business, almost 10 million was 9.8 million or something.
I remember when we met, what was that, 21? It would have been the beginning of 21.
Yeah, I think it was around 21.
And I remember that, yeah, you had had, so that was your year of like explosion kind of, correct. Right?
Yeah, and having to build that. And then that's like, you got the sales, now you got to fix all the operations. It's a never ending cycle of back and forth. Yeah. Grow the sales, fix the operations, grow the sales, fix the operations. And so, you know, just since then, it's crazy because now we're still, we're at like 15 million, right? So nothing insane past that for the next few years. We've trickled up a little bit. We went down 1 year and then back up and keep trending up little by little. But it's a completely different company based on just how everything's ran. And I understand the world's evolving too, and the industry's evolving. But just the systems, the process, how we run everything, is absolutely mind blowingly different. And it's set to be able to handle, you know, anything that comes our way with
more volume and whatever else. Yeah,
correct. Yeah. So that's the quick rundown.
Yeah, that's good. So, and you have a wife and kids.
Yep, three daughters and a wife. I'm outnumbered at my house severely.
Oh, okay. So I want to kind of back into that a little bit. Obviously, the, you know, how it's changed, right? Yeah. And how things look now versus then. And obviously, business is always it's an ever evolutionizing thing, especially with the way the world is and just the technology. You wake up 6 months from now and there's a new AI thing or a new whatever. Like the world we're living in is crazy right now. From the standpoint of what you talked about just a second ago, you said, which is a really good nugget, is like, you know, there's like sales and then you have to combat that with bringing the ops back up and then sales. And it's like it's always going back and forth. when you talk about what was like the biggest pivotal point, and I'm sure you'll probably say Adam to a degree, but like what was the biggest pivotal point for you to be able to hit that? Like, did you hit 9 with having some of that figured out, or was that just a big uptick year? And then it was like, oh, we had to figure a lot of things out. Were you building the plane on the way down type of thing, or had you kind of built it to allow for you to grow?
No, I think fortunately at that time we had a crew and it was the crew leader that was like working hand in hand with me. And he would pretty much handle everything. So we didn't have project managers, but he dealt with it all. And as we grew and did that, he brought on more crew leaders he trusted. And then he ran those guys. So I didn't have as much in-house operation. It was more dependent, which you can't, to this day and age, I was really lucky with him. Like, he did a very good job. It was like his first crew. He'd been working on a crew and called me and like wanted to start his own. And he had actually done a roof. He was like, oh, like, I actually did this roof for you guys that he saw on our Facebook page or something, and brought him on, and he was able to manage a lot of that. Adam didn't get here until 21. And then he helped with operations once, you know, okay, you can't just hope that this person does it forever, because crews seem to kind of,
they ebb and flow and all that stuff. Yeah.
So, but the growth was, it was just mostly marketing powered. And then fortunately, you know, we had some people in place that were taking care of the things that needed to be done, but there was a lot more mistakes and things that happened, you know, like we did rip a wrong roof off one time. You know, and fortunately the lady owned both houses, and it was the paperwork from Allstate was wrong. It had the other address on it. So we put it along, like the contract was right based on that paperwork. Everything was right. But because Allstate had it wrong, they went to that address because we put it in our system.
My guy is pulling out the Epstein files right now. He's just admitting to State Farm that, like, oh, he didn't. I'm just kidding.
No, actually, it should have been Allstate's fault.
No, yeah, it sounds like it was.
But initially, I was like,
you're like,
I'm not going to make the homeowner pay for it, and I know they're never going to pay for it. So he just bit the bullet and did it.
Okay, so you did end up biting the bullet. I thought you were saying something to the effect of like they were. It's not a big deal.
No. What I was saying like, was working the system. I was like, technically, we were right. We didn't, like, could have taken it to court. I did that roof that I was, but I, who would do? You know what I mean? That's shitty.
Yeah.
So,
but from that standpoint, when you're talking about the way that things pivoted for you, and obviously there's this balance, like you said, or this constant back and forth between ops and sales, like, when did you feel like you, was that something that came from the past of that, you know, being in publishing or being in that world, and you just kind of knew that there was going to need to be that balance there? I guess as an entrepreneur, how did you go from being the guy who was like, all right, I'm going to start this thing and I don't know too much about it, then have this big uptick year to then like, okay, I found, and I don't know, maybe you could speak to how you found Adam or your relationship prior, but like then you placed him and then you now are assembling this whole thing. And when you come in the office here, obviously there's, you know, there's memorabilia, there's games, there's, you know, a culture, you know, you got offices and whatever. I'm saying it's obviously a well-established company, and both from the standpoint of how it does business as well as the office that we're in. So I'm saying, like, what was like most of the pivotal pieces of that? Or is that just something you already had knowledge from?
No, I didn't. And I think anybody going in and thinking that, hey, I know how to do everything and I know how to do everything right, and I don't have any, you know, I can't take, like, that's not a great idea. Right. And so my strong suits were marketing and sales, because that's what I did for my family business. Right. And it's funny, when I first started coming in, like I worked like I did in that business. Right. I took calls at 8 o'clock at night. I'd text people back. It didn't really matter. I was used to traveling and working like 7 days, not like in the office working 7 days a week, but taking calls and, you know, in sales, it's like, hey, you want to get this sale? You got to be available for the people when they have questions. And so that was my really strong suits. And so that's why I was able to shoot up to the 9.8 million really quick, because I was able to like share that with my team, and they did the same things and were successful. Where I realized that operationally, hey, there's going to be issues. Is one, we started having issues. I actually did a podcast with Dustin Beigler one time, and he'd been a mentor of mine. I reached out to a lot of people in the industry because I didn't come from roofing, right? Yeah. And so I'm like, hey, I got to learn from people that know how to do these things. But I don't want this guy's system or this guy's system. I want to learn everybody's system and find out what I like the best, what works well in our industry and how we do things, et cetera. And I should probably say market, not industry, but anyway, I was talking to him on this podcast. I think it was maybe the American Contractor Show. I think John Dye was hosting. And then me and Dustin were on there at the same time. And me and Dustin had talked and, you know, and like we had worked together. He had helped me a lot of times. And he was the one that pointed it out on that show. He's like, all right, you just hit 9.8 million. He said, so you're probably having a lot of operational problems right now. Yeah, they're starting to get, you know, there's starting to be more and more issues. And so, and it's funny, we did the podcast and afterwards I grabbed him like, all right, dude. And so we talked for a little bit and then I realized, hey, I need somebody, you know, better in the situation that's running this, that's a little more refined at these type of things. And so that's when I met Adam. And
how did you meet Adam and what was the, well, and I'm going to have him on the show, but what's, so I'll hear a little bit of his story, but like, his background that made you feel confident enough just to like, all right, pull the trigger, place him. Like, was there lead up to that? Did you know him or did you just find like,
no, I was actually introduced to him. And his background helped. I mean, he was a junior partner at a massive company that ended up selling for like $680 million. And in the, so he had got a little bit of a payout or whatever, not enough to retire, I don't think, but you know, enough to feel comfortable and take some time off. And so he was one of those guys that doesn't really sit still. So he was doing some consulting in his free time. And, so I hired him as a consultant. I was like his third client. And I'll tell you what, even so much about the background, it was just personality, the way that he acted. Like he was interviewing me the whole time. Like he was going through and digging in. It was like, and you've met him, you know, like you can see that. And so like I'm asking him questions, but then he's like basically turning it around into an interview on me. And I noticed how sharp he was. And so eventually I was like, hey dude, I got an idea. Cause the consulting was helping me like place this and do a couple things. And, I said, why don't you just take the position? And he was like, no, he told me no. And so, I just kept on him.
And Aaron doesn't like rejection.
No, I don't. No, I don't at all. You heard it here first. But I was like, okay, cool. And so I just kept going and I was like acting like we were just doing consulting still. And I kept having him come in to meet me face to face. And, and so I'm showing him the ropes and like my vision. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So and, you duped him.
Yeah. And so I don't, that sounds like a negative connotation.
I'm just messing with you, man. But you were like, I'm going to lead you to the water.
But I was like, okay, no, sure, bud. You know, and no, but he was such a great guy. And, eventually I think he saw the same vision as I did. And decided to come on board. And so we've been partnered up since then. And I think it was July of 21 was when his start date was.
Yeah. And he's certainly there's a level of, I want to say convenience. That's the wrong word, but you know, you hit good with that. And I've actually, it's funny you said the interview thing, cause I had a client most recently hire somebody that, he was like, I literally told them in the interview that they interviewed better than I would interview.
Yeah.
In that interview or whatever. Yeah. So it's kind of funny that you said that same thing about him. That's kind of,
I get that there's nerves and things,
sure.
But you can tell like
when
people's conversations, the questions that they're asking, if they're just waiting to answer your question or they're actually inquiring to know real things, that are going to be prudent to the situation. Right. And so that's why, you know, I've learned a lot from Adam of things that were outside of my wheelhouse. In business. And so, it's just cool to see those things evolve and everything, sure. But you have to get people. The whole point, I think, was your question. You know, it's like, hey, I realized that there was a gap. I needed to find somebody because it wasn't me. I wasn't the gap filler. You know me, I'm not the integrator guy that's going to sit down and like do whatever, all these things, put them together. I'm the idea guy, that I have all these great ideas that I'm like squirrel. I needed somebody that could fulfill that role. And, meeting with him, and you just realize, you know, when you meet somebody that you know is going to be that good, if you don't find somebody like that, you know, you keep looking.
Yeah. And I know you kind of follow that, or you do follow that, not kind of, you follow that visionary integrator psychology. And that's how you've set up your business. Some businesses I've seen do that or have the same goal to do that, and they don't execute the same way that you guys have.
I think it's just a natural thing for us.
As I say, it feels natural when I'm here. Yeah. It doesn't feel like there's combativeness or that you're off being, being hard headed and he's dealing with a bunch of the stuff that you leave in the, you know, it seems like things are in sync, right? And that relationship works very symbiotically. Most that I've seen, especially in our industry, because I think like when the EOS wave came through, it was like, for those that don't know what I'm talking about, entrepreneurial operating system, and the whole Gene Wickman thing came around. It was like when people started to do that, and you know this from even my own experience and some of the things I've done with partnerships, it was just like toxic, because it was like, you're going to be, which I'm not a bona fide integrator, I played that role, but where you come in and you're like, hey, I'm going to do this. And you're, like you said, you're off in, you know, outer space doing whatever you do. And then you're kind of leaving everything in the dust for that person to handle. But it didn't seem that way between you guys. It feels like there's a good, and maybe he has a different opinion, but at least from what I see, it looks like you guys have like a lot of respect for each other. You don't like, he knows what he needs to do. You know what you need to do. And it works.
I think, yeah. Could have a different opinion. I don't think he does, but I'll listen to his podcast next and we'll find out. I think we have a very healthy respect for each other. Like, I respect his position. I don't go in and say, hey, you need to do these things. Like, he's the COO. If I have ideas, I bring them to him and ask his opinion. Some he's like, yeah, that's a great idea, let's do it. And then others, he's like, well, hold on, think about this. And I'm like, you know what, you're right. Cool. I'm brain dumping on you here. Let's talk through the stuff. So I think we respect each other's opinions on that. And I think that's definitely heavy. Neither one of us have a heavy ego.
I think that the key for that relationship to be successful from what I've seen is really, that you as a visionary, playing that role, you're never, so I know that the idea is like the visionary is over the integrator, at least that's how that's written, right? But then from your perspective, and I definitely wasn't planning on going down the EOS route, but just since we're going there right now, it feels more like what has worked in the past, or what I've seen work for most people, is that visionary is simply, like you said, he's like the ideas guy that's bringing everything to this person, and not the guy that's overstepping or going full, like, this is what we're doing, I'm not listening to you, you know what I mean? Yeah. So, and but that the operator truly is the one that is like, you know, they're spearheading, like,
he's steering the boat, right? And I'm just kind of maybe giving him some ideas on navigation.
Yeah.
Right. But I think the most important part to that relationship is you guys have the same destination in mind. You may have different ideas on the route to get there, but you guys have enough respect to talk through the routes and make decisions together. That way it's not your fault or your fault, but it's like, hey, we're bringing ideas together. We're going to find the best route to get to this destination that we both want to be at.
Yeah, that's good. And that's also something that like is applicable in any partnership, not just a integrator visionary type of like partners. Partnership in general needs to work that way.
And I think on the partnership thing too, and this as a whole, and yeah, I didn't expect to go down this road, but, I think it's important to have different personality types. You know, me and Adam are totally different. If you have people that are good at the same things and the same personalities, it doesn't work. I think those people tend to butt heads. Yeah. You want somebody that sees different angles on things. I see the views over here. I see the views over here. And so having those different outlooks with a healthy respect, I think leads to a better result.
And I know he does well. And I know like even some of the stuff we talked about off camera, about like the real estate stuff, there's some involvement you guys have there, but, is he a partner, an actual partner? I wanted to know if that's something that, like, is he a equity partner in?
He's not an equity partner because I'd started it beforehand. We actually looked at doing that, and it would have cost a lot of money for him in taxes. So he gets paid on the profit as a, it's just not on paper.
And that's what I was going to say is, like, just since we're finishing this part, this segment here, is your psychology with that, like, hey, I was open to a conversation, it just didn't make sense? Or is that more of a, hey, I like, do you have a, I guess, a philosophy around that in terms of your having this guy that's this high level that you're like, hey, I want him to be at his best, make the most he can, et cetera, et cetera. Like, are you a guy that usually is, hey, let's talk partnership, or hey, let me cut you profit share deals? Like,
I think it'd be a very rare case when you'd want to cut somebody into your business profit wise. Like, I'm sorry, not profit-wise.
Equity-wise.
I think people should be very, 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 very careful about doing that because things can go south very quickly. Yeah. That being said, after I realized that the relationship that we had, just the way that it fit, and he was had the option of doing that, I looked into it. But like I said, the company was already like a $12 million a year company. And talking to our lawyer, the way that you would do that would be a little expensive in taxes and things to get back. And so we decided to do it in a way where he gets paid out the same way, written in a contract. If we ever do a P&E deal, you know, he gets paid out, you know, same way. Yeah. So it's all contractually written.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's good, man. So strong pivot here. Let's go into, and I know we're,
is it the pivot playing footsie with me?
Oh, that's
a, that is a strong pivot, dude. Okay. OKC fan. Anyway, go ahead.
We have to sprinkle that dust in here. I love it. Hey, listen, for the record, though, I did tell you this. I was going to wear my OKC jersey, but I did not want to be that disrespectful.
Tell you what would have been hilarious.
It was a shame.
If you had a t-shirt underneath that, and then at the end of the podcast, so I'm not steaming mad, just at the end, by the way, signing out, and then you peel it back, that would have been pretty classic, and I couldn't have been too mad about
it. Okay, well, next time, I guess. Anyway, no, strong pivot. So as far as your... You know, your journey has been filled with different verticals, different industries. Obviously, you're landing in this. This is what takes up the majority of your time now. Like, when you talk about, let's just talk about you as how you've built things over the years, how you've set up your life, some of your, I guess, philosophy about like maybe real estate, managing your money, things like that. Like, how have you gone about assembling that? And what are some of the, we'll start high level, 30,000 foot view, like, how do you see the money? How do you see the investments? How do you see, like, how do you see that stuff from your perspective of how you manage that? And what is your overall, obviously the overall goal is always to like have financial freedom, secure long-term futures, all those things. But I'm saying,
and minimize taxes.
And minimize taxes. Great. Yes. Yes. 100%. But overall, and that's why, so some of that you can get into too, as well as like, how have you gone about doing that, navigating that? Cause you've done well, you've made yourself some profits over the years. Like how have you psychologically, set yourself up where you like, has it been a certain portion real estate, a certain portion here, those types?
I don't have any set standards. The key is finding somebody that, if you don't know a ton about it, finding somebody that knows about it and working with them. I work with two groups of investors. One's my brother and one's a guy that does new real estate. Like we're building a $35 million condo complex up in Fishers right next to Topgolf. We're building it from the ground up. So that's something I'm doing with him. And then I've bought a lot of pre-built strip centers and things with my brother's investment firm. And so it's better to start with somebody because like you get almost the same amount of returns if you bought it all yourself.
Cause you're buying better deals. You're doing
like
things better.
They get a management fee and like a kicker on the sell at the end when you guys sell it at the end. But to not have to literally deal with anything, it'd be like, hey, you would buy a house. Like, would you buy this strip center over here and never have to deal with it ever? If when you sold it, somebody got, you know, 10% of the profit, not even of the total thing, but like 10% of the profit. Yeah, it absolutely would. It's hands off. Right. And so, and then you have the ability to work with these people and learn the ins and outs, if you want to, of real estate. And so, I'm like, hey, I went and talked to somebody earlier and they're like, you got to buy real estate. Depreciation, you know, advanced appreciation.
On cost seg and stuff.
Yeah, like, yeah, do cost segs, which you can't really do on houses, right?
No, but you can do it with some of the things like you own.
Yeah, this the building, large things. Buildings. Like, because a cost seg's anywhere from $2,000 to $20,000 to do. Like, you don't want to spend $5,000 to cost seg a house out that's going to get you maybe $20,000 off on taxes. It's just not, it's not right. But if you go in, as an example, we bought a strip center down here, fully leased out that year. I was looking at what my tax liability, I thought it was going to be. And it was going to be around like, I think 150 to 180 was my guess. And so I was talking to it was my brother with that one. And I said, hey, this is what I got. Are you guys getting anything this year? And he's like, yeah, we're about to buy this. So I gave him $150,000 to invest in. And I can't remember what percent I own.
Now, do you have to set up, I've heard things like you have to have like a, you have a LLC or a separate entity that's registered as like a, you have to lay like a licensed.
Not as a partnered one. It's okay. Like if you own individually yourself, the entire building or whatever it is, whatever you're buying. Yes. You want a separate LLC. Cause like I own this building and I own a building right here next door. And if somebody tripped and fell at the other one and sued me, they could get this building. They could get this building. Anything that's not in its own LLC, which is the whole point of the LLC.
But I'm saying from a tax perspective, when you're talking about depreciation and those things, I thought there was something to the extent of like being a real estate professional or something like that. You don't have to have those criteria.
I don't. Maybe there's something extra, but I think you have to work so many hours in real estate
that's what
to establish that.
That's
you have to like show that you work 75% of your time or X hours a week in real estate to get that particular benefit you're talking about. But what happens is like when I went in, I gave my brother $150,000. They buy the strip center. I think it was like $2.6 or $3.1 million. So that goes towards the down payment. And then I own X percent of it. So whenever we get payouts, I'll get my percentage based of the payouts. It increases in value. And then 5-6 years, they sell it for $5 million, right? And then sure. We take our profits there. And so it's minimal. Like I get from that one, $3,000 a quarter or something. Like you're not living on it, right? But I took that $150,000. I got a K-1. We bought it in December. Yep. I got a K-1 in January.
It's gonna help
and got like $100,000 off on my taxes.
Yeah.
So I could have given the government $150,000 and paid my taxes, or I could have bought this apartment complex, which in 5 years I'm going to get $300,000 back plus monthly, or I think it's quarterly, $3,000 payments. Or I could just, pay the money and never see it again, right? You know, so it's like, it makes sense to do these things. And then like, it's your people are putting some, which I put money in the stock market and everything like that too.
I was going to say, by percentages, do you have any like, hey, I put this much in real estate, this much
I put in more in real estate, because if I put it in stock, I still have to pay taxes. Yeah. So I would rather, it's like they're earning like 15% IRR year over year in real estate. Typically, if you find a good deal, right? If you have a good partner and you have a good deal, they're doing all the work. They're brokering the deals. Yeah. They're doing everything. They give you a slide deck that says this is what your returns are going to be, and average says anywhere from 10-15% IRR year over year, and then you're going to get that back in 5-6 years when they do the flip, and you didn't have to pay taxes. Now you'll have to pay capital gains on that. But you could take it at that time and just reinvest.
That's what I was going to say. Or there's other programs where you can just take that money, put it immediately.
I'm going to get the number wrong. So sorry, but it's like a 1036 or 1031 roll up or something like that. But it has to be out of the same company. So like if I sold this building, 5240, blah, 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 I would have to then buy another building with 5240 LLC's money. Yeah. I can't take it from Southport at the Corners and then buy a new thing with a completely different LLC.
Yeah.
So that's the only way that you can do that.
That makes sense. And then from the standpoint of like your, like when you were getting...
This is not financial advice.
No, this is not financial advice.
I think we have to legally say that.
Yeah. That was just the last question on this, and then we'll pivot to our last thing. We'll wrap up is when you were at a certain age or certain, like, I mean, was there a certain point in time? Like, if you just always, like some of the guys I've had on before, they've been like, oh, I just knew I always didn't want to be broke and I wanted to have 6 months in the bank or a year worth of my, spending in the bank. And like, was there ever a point for you that was like, okay, I now am in a position, like, was there a certain size of your business or a certain size, like, hey, I had this amount of money sitting here. Now it's time for me to get invested in those things rather than just me putting all that back in my business. Like, was there a point in time where you did
this? For the first 3 years, I think I took a $50,000 salary.
And just reinvested everything.
I reinvested everything. I mean, don't get me wrong. I used the card and I bought meals and stuff like that. But right. But like for the most part, I didn't take much money. Like we bought cars cash. We paid everything cash. We at the upfront, we would prepay some bills for next year to minimize taxes. different things like that. And then I think in year 4 or 5, I was like, okay, we're in a healthy position. I'm pulling out this chunk of money. Like I need to do something responsible with it. I can put it in the stock market or this and that. But like I said, I had those conversations with not just my brother, but multiple people. And who's all the wealthiest people in the world?
People that have real estate.
Real estate.
And I was going to say that your brother is real well off in real estate. That's what we're going to have him on the show tomorrow. But yeah. So I know we'll talk to him more about that. We'll pivot. So yeah, just for those that are listening, like when you say your brother, not talk about some brother in your basement. You're like,
he's my older brother. He's been an entrepreneur since he was 18. He owned a cleaning company. I believe it was like senior year of high school where he had adults working for him. Opened a tanning salon shortly thereafter, and then opened his mortgage company and has been like mortgage broker in Indiana for a long time. Taken his profits and bought real estate, for the last 25 years. And that's just what he does, building that.
Well, I'll get into that with him when we get. I appreciate you arranging that, dude.
I got your back, dude.
Thanks, man.
Even for an Oakser
fan. All right. So, yeah. Last thing, as far as like biggest learning lessons, and like this is where you can, you know, as deep as you want to get, you know, whether that's the family, you know, elements or anything else. Like, what has been the biggest learning lesson for you? And as all of these things we talked about, obviously, like. Learning a little bit about your business and how you kind of settled into this like balance you've talked about, you know, sales and operations, balancing that. Talked a little bit about the money stuff and like how have you managed that, like try to, you know, minimize your tax liabilities, et cetera, through real estate. But when you talk about like the biggest learning lesson, what is the biggest learning lesson for you in as an entrepreneur? And it can be a multitude of things, just like if there's one big thing or a few small things that you're like, man, had I known this, I would have done this differently or whatever. Like,
there's probably a million things that I could sit here and go through.
So we'll be here.
Yeah, this is a 7-hour podcast. We're doubling Joe Rogan's time. but no, I mean, I just off the top of my head, there's a couple things I can think of. One, which is where I got out of the business and started working on the business instead of in it, right? The more you pull yourself away, the more things shift from things that you did to make it successful and the things that you guys did. And so you just have to be careful on those because there's a couple times where we're like, well, hey, why are we not getting as many referrals? Why are they not building relationships with realtors? Why are they not, you know, leveraging appraisal? Why are they not doing? And these are the things that made people love us and the things that we did there. And so you have to keep an eye on that because, you know, that stuff can pivot without you even really noticing it until it's like,
it's there.
Yeah.
And you're like, where's our stuff?
Yeah. Yeah. This is not what we did.
It's not what we've done.
Yeah. So that's one thing. And then when you shift, and by the way,
what would you have done differently in that scenario? If you had to like suggest something, you're like, oh, I wouldn't have let something go quite as fast. Like there's definitely like a controlled release, right?
SOPs like, that are inspected. Right. Like not just saying, hey, this is the way we do things, but like setting actual expectations. Inspect what you inspect is what Adam says. Right. He'll probably say it tomorrow. Don't break it up. I bet he says it. Okay. Right. And so that would be a big thing. Right. So I'm just assuming they're going to do, you know, everything because we ended up doing that was I told you earlier, we went down a year and we started looking at everything. I'm like, well, how come nobody's
doing this?
Nobody's leveraged appraisal. Like we have nothing in appraisal. You're just. If somebody doesn't get approved for insurance, we're basically walking away. We did $3.6 million in appraisal last year, right? And so that was our down year. And so, you know, you adjust some of those things. And then another thing is just, which I didn't have a big problem with this, but I am an overthinker and I constantly worry about it. So when you had the down years, you know, and or you have more overhead than you used to and things like that, like always have a backup plan for money. Don't just assume like, hey, especially in this kind of industry, like, oh, cool. I got $800,000 in the bank. Like we're good. Right. Cause anything can shift. Unexpected bills could happen. Like things could happen. And then next thing you know, you're like, holy shit, my payroll's, you know, you got payroll plus, like including labor and then ABC bill. Like it can be $400,000, $500,000 a week sometimes on heavy build months. You know, and so it's like always have a backup plan. Like I did not start taking any money out until I was like, I'm really comfortable with this. And then you have a limit like over $1 million. Like you don't want to leave that in your account. So we got a secondary. The odds of like Chase Bank shutting down are
pretty
small,
pretty slim.
But
pretty slim.
It's never zero. Right. And so, your FDIC insurance, you know, goes up. Yeah. 250. So even like we have to keep more than that in the bank
sure.
account.
Yeah.
But like, rocking. I won't go over $1 million in there, but we did get like a secondary account, which it's crazy to say people are like, oh, $1 million. I'm like, that's 4 or 5 weeks of payroll. If we got $0 moving forward, you know,
Oh, there's a lot of guys out there. I say a lot of guys, but guys that are, you know, there's two, three, four, five at a time in there, but then they let it, just like you said, they let it sit there. And yeah. And that isn't necessarily, it's because they've accumulated, right? Or right. whatever. But yeah, as you're saying,
I got a secondary account with extra insurance and it gains interest based on market. So it's like
4% or
I think it's five last time I checked. But so, you know, keep $300,000-$500,000 of that as a safety net. And then you're gaining, you know, $25,000-$30,000 a year on it, just sitting there. And if you ever need it, something crazy happens, dude, pop it out.
One of the
even if nothing crazy happens, say you start growing and expanding, or you've sold more than you've ever sold, and you're in insurance, you're building more than you've ever built, which means you're typically fronting a lot of money. We pay upfront commissions, and then we have to pay labor, and then we have to pay materials. So we're fronting more than is coming in until you get that final payout.
Oh, 100%. So, and I know I went down that rabbit hole of those, some of those money things, which is, it's important to talk about because yeah, that's important. You know, when we work with clients, we're talking about reserve accounts, which is essentially what you're talking about. That's separate from the operating account. But the one or two things that you would say, okay, like you said, okay, SOP, standard operating procedure, like, you know, following through with like, hey, we set this expectation, we set this process procedure, but then making sure that there is something, someone holding some level of accountability there. Sure. Is there anything else that you would say is like one of the biggest learning lessons that you've had and you're like, man, I really wish that I would have done this differently. Or if I went back and, you know, was talking to my younger entrepreneur self, what that would have been?
I think it's just realizing that the business sometimes outgrows people. I've been in some positions that were not very, like you started off early on and like, hey, this guy was a great fit for the role. And I had one of my best friends at the time in that position. And then as the business continued, we kind of outgrew him and then we ended up splitting, parting ways, and now we're not friends at all anymore.
Yeah. And those things suck, yeah, by the way.
They do suck really bad. And I had no ill will.
Because you can be like really, not only can that person grow with you, I've had that experience myself personally, but like grow with you. But then you're like kind of outpacing it, or they're like, and then it's like, you still care about that person. You like genuinely care about that person because they've been with you through the thick and thin, whatever. Then you have to cut that off. And like you said, it's like really most of the times when it cuts off, it's like, yeah, that
I think
same.
It just got so bad in the time frame where, he actually ended up resigning. I was fortunate enough to realize that I didn't have to let him go. He resigned himself. But what I did realize after that is, holy shit, I cannot hold on to these things because of relationships if they're not fulfilling what they need to fulfill. And so I moved from that to Adam, and I was like, okay, like I see the difference here. And so now you have to be very mindful of that stuff and the relationships, because you can let people linger to it. And I had to fire my nephew. I love that dude. He's awesome. But like, there's just things that you have to be very careful with, but do not hold on. And I don't even practice EOS, but I think this would fall into the EOS category of like, hey, if somebody's not fulfilling what they need to do, like it needs to be
severed. Yeah. And I think that, now, one of the things, and you know this, everybody knows this, it's an experienced entrepreneur. The ones that usually do better as entrepreneurs are the ones that are like, you know, no one really loves, like, I think maybe sociopaths do, but like legitimate sociopaths, I'm not making a joke, like don't mind like the, hey, you're cut off, you're dead to me, whatever. But like, if you're not, which you're obviously not, having a hard conversation is most of the time like the biggest difference between where your business is and where you want it to go. And like, that's one thing that we get as a common thread a lot, is like what you're saying is basically like outgrowing people, like that conversation or that like uncomfortable nature of like, you've been with me for a while, or you've been a good friend to me for a long time, or because obviously a lot of our industry starts with like, you hire your brother or you hire a nephew or whatever,
people you know.
And then it's like, it kind of grows. And yeah, that's a super big value point of like, you know, you can't, yeah, you, the people, as you're outgrowing, your business is outgrowing your people.
You can't let your business suffer. If you're really in it for that, you cannot let it, because it's not just about the business, but I'm not saying for me either. Like I say, my business, but there are 30 some odd people 100%. That work here, not including crews and all their families, that all those families depend on this being successful. my family depends on it being successful, their family. So it's like doing a disservice to the business does a disservice to a lot of people. That's not a greedy thing.
Yeah, it's not 100%. Love it, man. Thanks for being on, dude. Thanks for having me in your spot.
Yeah.
And thanks for sharing a little bit. And is there anything else that you have that you'd love to sprinkle in there? Just talk a little bit more about how you're smirking like you're about to have some like funny thunder comment. So
yeah. I think thunder is the funny comment as a whole. Did you see SGA's outfit on the ESPYs?
No, I didn't, but
it was ridiculous.
Was it?
Yeah, just like his foul baiting. Anyway, so great to meet you guys. I'll do the outro. Welcome to the... No, I'm kidding. Go ahead. No, all in good fun.
No, it has been fun. Yeah, and just so you know, those of you that are listening, you're like, man, this Pacer-Oklahoma-Say thing feud. Just so you're filled in, I love my Thunder. He loves his Pacers. And we had a lot of nonsensical discussions all through that series. And I try to be rational. And I'm going to be biased. Aaron was not. I'm just kidding. But no, we've enjoyed it.
Hey, you know what you should do? You know, you did the outro. You should wrap this up with that picture I made of you on ChatGPT.
Oh, yeah. That was great.
Yeah.
Where you had me in a Pacer uniform.
If this episode ends without that picture,
I will.
Then let him blow him up in the comments. Yeah. I can get it to you if you don't get it.
Oh, you can? Yeah. Thanks. Appreciate it. All right. Thanks for joining us, guys. This has been fun. Again, if you like the content, like, subscribe, let us know what you think. Thanks again, brother, for being on. I enjoyed the conversation, and this is a good dude over here. So I hope that you guys enjoyed it. We'll see you on next week's episode. Thanks for being here. We'll talk to you soon.